You like Fireboy? I do.
You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, a weekly conversation with the hottest game designers on Kickstarter. Here comes your host, Jeff Beck.
Well, hello. Thanks for tuning in to Your Tables on Fire. This is episode number 49. Okay, with me tonight we have not one, but two special guests. This is Maggie Stewart and Jeff Fitzgerald, the founders of Hidden Creek Games and the designers of Dragon Dodge. Maggie and Jeff, welcome to Your Tables on Fire.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we're glad you're here. Well, let's kick things off right. Why don't you both take a moment and introduce yourselves?
I'm Maggie Stewart, and my background is in physics, and I've spent some time teaching high school physics, but now I stay home with my kids and do some things on the side, like designing games and running Kickstarters.
Just little hobbies like that.
And I'm Jeff. I'm Maggie's husband. I also came from physics, and now I do data science and game design on the side. As a fun hobby with the wife and kids.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very fun. So many questions come out of that. First one, so you're both into physics. Now you're doing game design. Was there anything you're able to bring from your experience in working within physics that helped you become fantastic game designers?
I'm not sure. So at least some of the ideas, Dragon Dodge actually came out of trying to make a physics game that actually took a weird right turn into Wizards and Dragons. But I guess sort of the analytical mindset, I guess we approach game design from a very analytical point of view, data-driven, that sort of thing. So I guess maybe a little bit of the physics personality carried over into game design.
Interesting. What about you, Maggie? Anything you've noticed that has been helpful?
Some of the kind of analytical approach of, in physics, we like to think about everything as a model, basically, like, what can you approximate was kind of like the core of what makes whatever concept you're trying to understand, what's the core of it that you could kind of translate into other things as well. So for games, kind of take a step back and look at a game, like, what are the basics of it that are kind of like what make the game what it is, and what are all the other little extra things that you could easily change and still maintain the basics of the game.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Well, Jeff, you mentioned that this is a hobby that you enjoy doing, not just the two of you as a husband and wife, but perhaps with your entire family. So have you been able to involve your kids with this game as well?
Yeah, definitely with this game. It's simple enough that our six-year-old, I guess when she was five, was able to play it. She enjoyed it. She really liked it. She got into the manipulating the board aspect. And actually, while we were creating Dragon Dodge, she made her own game. Her name is Caitlin. So she made a game called Library K for Caitlin, I guess. And it's a pretty simple deterministic game. I don't know, she cut out some library cards or some library books out of little cards and made some little pawns and cards for, princesses and cats and things like that. But it's really just you draw cards and you either get to check out a book or the library is closed and whoever has the most books at the end wins. So it's kind of a fun game. Some of our friends got to play test it and, have requested that she make copies for them. And I think they're still waiting on their copies. But yeah, it's been fun. The kids enjoy it. We play games with them all the time. So we really want to set the example of inventing and sort of taking a hobby one step farther to kind of teach them that that's a good way to live your life.
Right. I love it. That's great. Well, now that you have friends that are requesting copies of her game, are you going to teach her the secrets of Kickstarter as well?
I'll leave that to Maggie.
Yeah, I guess I've been the one that's been trying to learn about Kickstarter. She already made a video. She already made a YouTube video for how to play.
How to play
game.
Video, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, she definitely gets very excited every time we get a new backer. but I guess she's not having to do all the work to get them, so it's kind of
right. She really wants to be able to back our game on Kickstarter right now. She's disappointed that she can't, and we have. So I think she's got some learning to do about Kickstarter, how it works, but you know, she's definitely enthusiastic.
That's fantastic. Well, let's take a step back. Why don't you take a minute and tell us how you got into gaming in the first place?
Well, for me, I guess it was mostly through Jeff. You know, when I was growing up, we played the occasional game at home, but there wasn't a lot of that. And then I still remember the first time I met Jeff's family. It was for Thanksgiving. And really, one of the first questions I was asked is, do you play games? And I was like, well, but what do you mean? What kind of games? And it just went from there, I guess. And by the time we were like in grad school, I guess, we started playing a lot more of the more modern games like Settlers of Catan and Carcassonne and stuff like that. And now it's just kind of out of hand. We just buy games all the time.
Yeah, so I grew up playing games. I have a sister that is 15 months older, so you know, you can imagine we were pretty competitive growing up. We were in each other's space a lot, and that kind of manifested in games quite a bit. So family get-togethers were all about games, either party games or all the cousins getting together to play Uno and stuff like that. And so I remember when we were very young, my sister and I playing Monopoly and Clue and games like that. It was a lot of fun, but it sort of made me a very competitive gamer. And then I met Maggie, and we sort of have met in the middle a little bit. Like, she's not that into the one-on-one direct competition games. So we've been sort of evolving toward a happy compromise of games that are somewhat competitive but are still fun even if you lose. Because I tend to take games a little too seriously sometimes, but I'm softening up on that.
That's probably for the best. Jeff, yeah. Any fantastic memories from your youth gaming-wise?
So I look back at the glory of Monopoly. I think I played that with my sister and cousin, I don't know, dozens of times, and I think I was undefeated. So that was definitely fun, crushing them in Monopoly. one of my early memories. Yeah.
What was your secret?
I don't know. I guess just roll the dice a little better.
Oh, the truth comes out. I love it.
Yeah. So Clue. So we had this game, Clue Master Detective. It was like Clue, but it had a few more rooms and you know, a couple of little extra things. I remember early on, my sister and I, we were sort of taught by our dad strategies for how to take notes on what you know and try to deduce more than just what the cards you've snooped are. So I remember that as sort of a lesson in, you know, deductive reasoning and applied to games. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Are you playing Clue and Monopoly with your kids?
No, I guess we buy a lot of like cooperative games now for the kids. I think that's a better strategy for introducing your kids to gaming. Monopoly, I don't think we could make it through a whole game. It's, you know, it's, at this point, it's like I don't think we can sit down for as long as that game takes and play it. We aim for shorter, friendlier games.
Yeah, or we also just modify some of the games we like so that they can play them with us. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a good compromise for everyone.
Right. What kind of games have you modified for them?
Let's see. We've played Sushi Go, Lanterns. We've played Lotus with them. They like Get Bit, even though they don't really... At least our youngest, she's two. She doesn't really get it at all, but she just likes the little guys.
Suro, actually, our youngest is two. She's really good at Suro somehow. She picks the right tiles to win. It's magic. I don't know how she does it, but she's got no idea what's going on, really. But she picks, it's just like, here, Holly, pick a tile. And she picks the right ones to win the game. It's impressive.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. When did you guys get into game design? How did that leap occur?
That happened a while back. So I remember a couple of instances of modifying rules. I guess early on, like in high school, I used to play a lot of Risk with my friends. You know, if back in the day, Risk was a pretty popular thing to do if you had a whole Saturday night to kill and wanted to make enemies out of your friends.
Right.
So we used to modify Risk. We played it so much that we would modify the rules and introduce you know, new ways to play it. So that was kind of early on the introduction to, you know, hey, this isn't a fixed thing that you have to follow the rules. You can kind of do whatever you want with it. So that was interesting. And then my sister, I think, was actually one of the main catalysts for getting into game design. She wanted the game Resistance to be a four-player game because that's the size of her gaming group typically. So I remember one time we went over to her house and Maggie and I helped design a modification of Resistance for four players. It was a pretty different game, but I felt like it worked, and that was kind of fun and sort of a nice, you know, one night game design experience that I think stuck with me for a while and made me, you know, brainstorm new things. And then there was I guess the first game that we actually invented was out of my sister wanting a version of Risk that was based in Star Trek. And I remember thinking, well, like, you can't make a Star Trek Risk unless you want to get sued. But right. I really had this fixation on sort of a, it would be cool to have an asymmetric game where the Borg is taking over the galaxy and, you know, you're trying to unite all the different species. You know, you've got the Klingons and the humans, and they're all trying to fight back against the Borg. That is sort of like a cooperative setting, and that evolved into the other game that we made called Countervirus. That was sort of just like a, hey, this is kind of a fun thing to do. We weren't really that concerned about, you know, playtesting the game and all that. It was just like a fun hobby. So that I think is what got us serious about game design, is going through it once fully, inventing a game, making sure that it worked well, was a good experience, that sort of thing.
How do you guys work together? Do you guys divide out the responsibilities, or you just kind of just dive in and brainstorm all together?
Usually Jeff kind of takes the lead in coming up with new ideas for games, and then he tells me about the ideas, and the way it usually ends up is I tell him why they won't work, in my opinion. but in all that back and forth, usually something comes out that we can work with. And
I think that's a polite way of putting it. What usually happens is I come up with an idea, and she's like, "Nah, I don't like it."
but it's actually been really fun. It's a much better thing to do every night than watch TV. So Jeff kind of takes the lead on the creative aspect, but I think then we both kind of work on brainstorming how to actually make it work and the initial kind of prototypes and playtesting and stuff. And then I guess I have kind of taken more of the lead on how to actually run a Kickstarter and get on interviews like this one and things like that.
So. And then I do like the prototype art and the graphic design stuff also. You know, until we need an actual artist to produce, you know, quality stuff, I make the stuff for prototypes.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Well, let's talk more about Dragon Dodge. So, for those who aren't familiar with Dragon Dodge, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, Dragon Dodge is, the really quick description is a light strategy game that is good for families or casual gamers, or if you're looking for like a light strategic filler game. That's kind of what we're going for with Dragon Dodge. So it's a tile game where you start out with some tiles laid out randomly. So every game starts out a little bit differently. And you're controlling a team of two wizards competing against another team of two wizards in sort of this like Wizard Olympics type of situation. And there are two dragons on the board. You're trying to move the two dragons towards the opposing team so that you can tag them with the dragons and eliminate them. But at the same time, they're trying to move those same two dragons towards you. So you, on your turn, you have some cards in your hand that are going to determine what you can do. So it's not like a completely open-ended strategy game. You're limited by your cards. But there are cards that allow you to do things like rotate tiles and slide tiles that makes it so that on any given turn, you actually have a lot of different choices of, first of all, which piece to move and which path to take. And that's where a lot of the choices and strategy come in. Every time that the dragons move, you take a tile out of the game. The tile that the dragon came from gets taken out. So the board kind of starts to shrink as the game progresses. So it has kind of like collapsing board feeling that basically forces the game to end sooner rather than later.
Well, that's pretty fun. Well, take us back to when this game first came, you know, when you guys first discussed it. And, you know, perhaps Jeff presented an idea and Maggie, you said that sounds terrible. Or, you know, how did that conversation go out?
So it was, I think it was like in spring. We were outside with the kids playing. I think they were like playing in the pool, that sort of thing. And we were talking about making a physics game. Like this was after we had sort of solidified our first game, Counter Virus, and we were thinking about like how do we make another game here? And we were thinking about physics games, and we were bouncing around this idea of a Schrodinger's cat game. So if you're familiar with Schrodinger's cat, it's sort of the thought experiment for quantum mechanics, where there's a cat in a box and there's some poison inside that probabilistically is going to go off based on some radioactive decay inside. So until you open the box, the cat is, you know, according to quantum mechanics, in both alive and dead states. And it's only when you open the box that it's either alive or dead. So we were thinking about, like, how do you make that into a game? And we were thinking of maybe you've got, like, you're playing Schrodinger and he's got a lab or he's, you know, at home and he's got a bunch of cats in boxes and he's going to check on them. So he's moving around the board and everything and he's going to check on cats and they're either alive or dead. And, you know, it was kind of a grim game, but it didn't last too long. We were like, all right, well, what would it be like? So we started making little squares and like, okay, so what if he moves over here and he checks on this box? Maybe the cat is not there. And I think that didn't work. That was a pretty bad idea. But as Maggie pointed out, that was a pretty bad idea. So then I think we started, you know, just like, well, all right, I like this kind of movement between squares idea. How do you control that and make that interesting? And I think it may have been Maggie that had the idea of, well, what if each edge of the square had like a number, and in order to move between them, you had to have cards that add up to the sum of those numbers or something. And we tried that a bit, and that sort of led to this idea of, well, they're just maybe four symbols and you have to have the right cards to move between the tiles. And then, so what could you be doing there? And we played around with it enough to find that mechanic was interesting, that there's this idea of movement between tiles based on the cards you have matching the properties of the connecting tiles. And so in order to move around effectively, you have to rotate and slide these tiles around and have the right cards to move between them. So that's how it got started. I think we made some early prototypes that were pretty similar to what the final game ended up being. We had no theme. It wasn't Wizards and Dragons. It was just moving around a board. And then we started thinking about themes and like, well, what could you be like running away from here? What could that be? Like, what would these four symbols be? And we kind of like the idea of earth, wind, water, fire as like the four elements that you have to work with. And that led us to wizards, and well, wizards can kind of control dragons with spells. And so the idea just kind of took off from there. One of the major breakthroughs we had from the early prototype to what it is now is the concept of the shrinking board. Before, we had this move around the board type of situation, and we went to play test it and the players broke it. Like, they just destroyed it. They were like, well, I'm just going to play purely defensively and the game's going to last forever and that's not fun. And we were like, oh man, that's that's a bit of a problem. So we introduced this kind of shrinking board mechanic and it solved all the problems, and the game just kind of clicked from there.
Well, how did you come up with the name of Dragon Dodge? Where did that come from?
That was Maggie. That was pretty early on, right?
I mean, we're just trying to think of names, and I kind of liked the alliteration, I guess, with the two D's. And even though, you know, once you actually play the game, you realize that you're mostly moving the dragons rather than trying to dodge them. But at the end of the game, you're usually trying to dodge a dragon, or someone is anyway. Whoever's losing is trying to dodge the dragon. So
that's how you know you're losing, is if you're the one dodging. You know you're in trouble. Okay, I like that. So did any other games provide inspiration for this, or is this completely just off the top of your head?
Definitely. So I think in terms of the actual mechanics, no, and the actual theme, no, but ETX taught us a pretty valuable lesson. We went there with Countervirus, which is like a 45-minute game. It's pretty complicated. Like, trying to explain that to people quickly, we learned that that was pretty tough. So we were not going to get the number of playtests that we needed to make a good game in the amount of time that we were willing to put in. So what we saw there was Dice of Crowns. So Dice of Crowns got a lot of playtests. A lot of people came to play it at ETX, and we were like, that's what we should be doing, is a shorter, simpler game. Like, it's quick to explain, it's quick to play, and it's fun. And then when we started thinking about it, we were like, well, that's what we play at home anyway. Like, we don't play the hour-long games anymore. We've got two kids. By the end of the day, we're pretty exhausted. So we've got time for maybe a half-hour game. And that's pretty much our wheelhouse in terms of what we like and what we know. So I think Dice of Crowns really opened our eyes to, like, that's what we should be doing. It's simple, short.
That makes sense. What did that help? I mean, like you say, not only from the sense that you were able to do more playtesting, but I guess designing a game that more, like you said, fits your wheelhouse and is a game that you'd be playing otherwise, did that help open up design space in your head for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think just thinking about, like, what is our goal in terms of the gaming experience that we want, that was kind of what was guiding us. Once we had kind of the initial idea of the, you know, what the game was going to be like, and we started playtesting, you know, because then you get a lot of feedback from people, right? Everyone has ideas, which is great, but then you have to decide which ones you actually want to try out to and incorporate, and which ones are like, well, that's a different game than what we're trying to do. Right. And so that's where we kind of had to decide, okay, what are we going for here? We wanted a game that you could play with our parents that are not gamers, or with our kids, or with our neighbors, that we can easily explain, but that is also still enjoyable for us, even though we play some more complicated games sometimes, this one can still be fun. So that was kind of like the guiding principle, I guess, and what we were trying to go for in terms of the gaming experience.
Mm-hmm. So now the game is up on Kickstarter, so let's talk about that for a little bit. You guys have been going for, what, about a week and a half, 2 weeks, somewhere around there?
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
And how are things going for you?
Well, it's going well. I think we're almost at around 65% right now. Mm-hmm. So we got a good start thanks to lots of people that had play tested and went and backed us on the first few days, which is always nice. Yeah. And people keep coming slowly but surely, I guess, as it usually goes in the middle of a campaign.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're, you know, just doing these types of things to kind of get the word out there, and we keep demoing at local stores. We're going to be at a convention, what's it called? Terminal City Tabletop Convention next weekend, to just keep advertising and hopefully reach our goal.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what you've been doing, you know, to build interest and to advertise it. I guess even before you launched, what kinds of things were you doing to help build awareness of your game?
Well, we had been, so there's this local community here in Seattle called Playtest Northwest, and it's a group of designers, game designers, that organizes playtest events. So some of them are small, like a local game store is just on a, you know, Saturday afternoon, and maybe you go there and you get like 10 people to come play your game. But then they also have a presence at all of our gaming conventions in the area. And so thanks to them, we were able to go to, what was it, Dragonflight, PAX West, and Geek Girl Con last year. Mm-hmm. And we got hundreds of people to play our game, which was really cool. We never could have done that on our own without Playtest Northwest. But thanks to them, we were there. And So a lot of people were really liking the game. People were asking us, where can we buy this? We're like, well, actually, if you give us your email address, we can let you know when you can buy it. So that's how we started building a little bit of a mailing list. And then obviously we sent out to reviewers. So we had 5 or 6 reviews done before we even launched the Kickstarter. Which also helps kind of raise awareness of, you know, people in other areas that may not be at the same conventions that we are. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I noticed that I found interesting on your Kickstarter page, you talk about there's an expansion you can purchase even before the game's out. So what's the expansion all about?
So I guess the expansion is additional to the base game. There's a few extra cards that we add. Early on, we had playtested this idea of a special card that lets you move the other team, sort of like a possession spell. Because in the game, you can cast spells to move your own wizards around or the dragons, but not the other team's wizards. So this was something we had been playtesting all along, and we felt like it added something fun to the game, but it wasn't necessary. It wasn't something that we felt was missing if you took it away. The base game was still really fun. Mm-hmm. But it also just added a little more complexity in explaining it. So we wanted a game that you could explain in 2 or 3 minutes, so you can be up and running and actually play within 2 or 3 minutes. Just that extra little bit of here's a card that lets you move the other team required a little more explanation. And then we also started testing around our house first is this idea of flipping the tiles. So on the back side of the tiles, there are no elements. It's just kind of a brick tile, and it allows you to create shortcuts. So we added some cards that let you flip tiles instead of just rotate and move and add them back to the board. Now you can flip them to create shortcuts. So that actually, again, doesn't really feel like it was necessary, but added some really kind of fun. Once you've played it enough, you kind of want like, well, what next? That kind of satisfies that craving for, and now there's a new challenge. There's a new element to the game. So that's kind of pretty much what the little mini expansion's about.
Right. Well, that's pretty fun. Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, this is your first Kickstarter campaign. Is that right?
Yes.
So do you have everything lined up for the post-campaign work that needs to get done? Like, do you have a printer all ready to go and distribution all figured out and all those kinds of things?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started reading about all the Kickstarter stuff off of Jamie Stegmaier's blogs and just, like, everything that's out there pretty much, like, more than a year ago. And by this point, yeah, we have we're going to be working with Watts Games. So we have all of that, like all of the art is done as well, except, well, there's like 2 cards that are going to be done in the next couple of weeks because we're giving backers a chance to vote on the wizards that are going to go on the cards. But yeah, other than that, like all of the art is done and yeah, we're going to be ready to go. And our number one goal is going to be to deliver this on time for everyone.
Right.
And since we're talking about the art, I do want to say we have a very talented artist, Tyrannicliffe, who's local in the Washington area here, who did all the art and is going to be doing a live painting of the wizards that people vote on during the campaign. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, and the art does look fantastic. So kudos to her and to you guys as well. So that's great. So what's next for you guys once Dragon Dodge is out the door and doing its thing? What, do you guys have another game you're working on, or what's the plan?
I have some early ideas. Right now, most of my ideas either are purely thematic, and I don't really have a good sense of how the mechanics would work, or they're purely abstract, and I don't see how a theme could actually fit there. We're kind of just kind of backlogging ideas here. We've got a good list of things that are ready to playtest, but we're sort of waiting to see how the Kickstarter goes before we invest too heavily in developing a new product.
Mm-hmm. So a big part of our audience here on Your Tables on Fire are aspiring game designers, people who are hoping to someday soon be in your shoes and be launching their first campaign. What would you tell them?
Well, I think one thing I would say, because I know, I remember very clearly reading this about a year ago when I first started looking into Kickstarter. It was, I believe, in Jamie Stegmaier's blog, actually, that said, you don't have to launch today. Because you're going to feel like you need to set a deadline. And I think almost inevitably, it's going to be way too early when you first set it. So just be open to delaying launching until you're really ready. Or at least, you know, until you actually feel comfortable launching and you think you know what you're getting yourself into. And, you know, just do your homework. There's still going to be surprises and it's going to be harder than you expected, but at least spend some time preparing.
Right.
And I guess I would add, from a design perspective, I find it very helpful to have someone whose opinion you value that you can sort of bounce ideas off of. And I guess the only advice I would have is don't get offended when they come back and say they don't like something, because chances are it's not good. So don't get too emotional about your ideas. Just kind of practice having lots of ideas. That's kind of the way to go, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good advice. Well, Maggie and Jeff, it's time for me to come clean with you guys and let you know that the real reason I brought you here onto Your Tables on Fire was not necessarily to talk about Dragon Dodge, but instead to play the game design challenge.
All right.
So this is how this works. I'm going to pick a theme at random. I'm going to present that theme to you, and then I would like you guys to discuss it. Maggie, feel free to shoot down all of Jeff's ideas.
Yeah, I'll throw something out. Maggie, you just say, hey, that's bad.
And then ultimately come back to me with what on earth that game might be. You guys up for that?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. So let me see if I can find a theme. And that theme is going to be babies in space.
Babies in space.
Oh, boy. Okay.
The first thought that comes into my head is, how would you change a diaper in space? What would those accidents be like when there's no gravity?
That could be really messy.
Yeah. So maybe you don't want to go there, but that was my first thought. Maggie, feel free to say that's bad.
I don't know. I think there might be something there. Maybe, you know, like you're trying to change diapers in outer space. You're trying to get all the poop to float onto your opponent's area or something, you know, and trying to avoid theirs. I don't know.
Interesting idea. Babies in space. So what do babies do? They eat, they poop, and they cry, and occasionally sleep. So let's see, how would you put babies to sleep in space? There's no, what would they do for a crib?
See, now you're assuming that there's adults in space as
well. Yeah, I'm kind of imagining like a nursery, like a daycare situation. Like, you know, astronauts have kids, right? So they have to leave their kids somewhere where they're out doing spacewalks and fixing Hubble telescopes and such. So I'm imagining like a daycare situation where maybe it's a cooperative game. So maybe it's like the daycare staff are the players and these babies are causing lots of problems. So you've got to change their diapers. You got to feed them. You got to put them to sleep. But how do you do that with no gravity? So yeah, that maybe there's something there, like a cooperative angle.
Okay, I like it.
What do you think, Maggie? Bad idea?
Well, since we have limited time, I'll go with that's okay. Yeah, no, I like the idea of it being a cooperative game. So you kind of...
That's like parenting, right? Parenting is cooperative.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The cooperative game against your kids.
When they're floating around and trying to feed them, but the food is floating away.
Yeah, so maybe like you win if all the babies go down for a nap.
And, right.
There's lots of reasons why they can wake up. So maybe you know, you have a set of babies and they have like hunger meters and, you know, crankiness meters, and you got to like keep those under control. And once you get them down to a certain level, they fall asleep. And so maybe that's the idea, is we got to work together to manage all these babies' hunger and diapers and, you know, entertainment. Yeah, so maybe there's a certain like set of actions you can do, like, you know, entertain, you can change diapers, you can that sort of thing.
Okay. I like it. This is the most family-friendly game I could possibly imagine. So. Well done. Well, Maggie and Jeff, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today.
You too.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having us.
All right, thanks for coming on. And best of luck with Dragon Dodge and the rest of your campaign.
Thanks.
Well, that was Maggie Stewart and Jeff Fitzgerald, the founders of Hidden Creek Games and the designers of Dragon Dodge, currently on Kickstarter. You've been listening to Your Tables on Fire. You can find a link straight to Dragon Dodge on our website at www.yourtablesonfire.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at TableFire. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Board Game Geek. Find us on any of those sites and give us a review. We really want to hear what you think. Well, until next time, go light it up.